Previously on Solve the World.
No, we can't start that way. Not today. Today is too important. This is our story. There was a girl. She tried to survive in an era hardly worth surviving. She tried searching for meaning between the lines. A plot was hatched. She found herself attached to larger and larger plans. Through little effort of her own, this girl, the one we call Jen Dash, became a household name. Celebrity became her. There's a boy in Sweden who kisses a magazine picture of her every night before bed. A grandmother in Brazil who includes Jen in her rosary. The world was too much for the girl. She couldn't parse its infinite segments, couldn't make sense of myriad puzzle pieces. So, she did what any sensible soul would do. She boiled the arithmetic down to 2 points. Those points? A boy named Atticus. A girl named Scout. She traversed the world to save them. This, my friends, is the reason Jen Dash went into the glass house. Would you? This is our story. There was a boy. He only met the girl the one time, but he knew somewhere where breath meets soul, their hearts were knit together. Even so, you can't love others if you don't first love yourself. The boy, Atticus, made a few decisions. Not many, just a few. He hated himself for it. So, he found a land to exile himself on. A place much like death or rebirth. A place to escape his past, to escape his mistakes. Now, his stubbornness is causing a turn of events that'll burn darker and more painfully than anything that's happened before. Welcome to the Glass House. Enjoy your stay. Solve the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes.
I like my chambers to be as airless as possible.
Episode 67, The Glass House. You know that feeling you get when just the right song turns on at just the right time? When it hits hard. Emotion seeps from your stomach and pours out your nostrils, your ears. You become a teapot set to explode. Friday morning, 4 a.m. Atticus couldn't sleep. Work schedules were all out of sync due to the Glass House event. A 4-day charade wherein every smuggly in Smuglyville had to face decimation. That's what they were calling it on the local TV news outlets. The term comes from the ancient Romans. Apparently, when a Roman legion performed poorly in battle, or even in some cases, in order to ensure they didn't perform poorly, the Roman general in charge of the legion would randomly pick out one out of every 10 soldiers from the ranks. The legion was then given clubs, and forced to beat their unfortunate comrades to death. The Roman historian Polybius described decimation in this way. Quote, "If ever these things happen to occur among a large group of men, the officers reject the idea of bludgeoning or slaughtering all the men involved, as is the case with a small group or an individual. Instead, they find a solution for the situation which chooses by a lottery system sometimes 5, sometimes 8, sometimes 20 of these men, always calculating the number in this group with reference to the whole unit of offenders so that this group forms 1/10 of all those guilty of cowardice. And these men who are chosen by lot are bludgeoned mercilessly." Insofar as decimation is a cruel punishment, it also, stunningly, appears to have been a successful institution for the Roman elite. In other words, it worked. The Glass House works on a somewhat similar plane of existence. It is not meant as punishment, but boy oh boy. Friends, family of those left collapsed in their transparent tombs will soon feel punished. The Glass House works as an exacting paradigm shifter for those left alive. You enter, you live. You leave knowing death is real, and it's always hunting you, haunting you. The reality of all this split Atticus Further's heart at a hair past 4 in the morning on a pre-dawn Friday. He couldn't sleep, so the young lad was doing his morning workout. Twice. Headphones securely fastened over his ears to blare out the reality creeping ever closer. The song playing in this moment was Bukowski by Modest Mouse. Atticus was on his 22nd pull-up in the doorway of his apartment when the song hit him. It forced him to drop to his knees. He curled in a ball, tried to catch his breath, tried to do anything to stop an oncoming panic and mental collapse. He was on the edge. His work as a psych ward assistant had warded off the edge surprisingly well up to date. Atticus had forgotten how close its havoc-wrecking border really was. One more push. One more push. At any moment, and it could all be over. This song, now, was a push. And it hurt. Bukowski, the song, is obviously about the poet-philosopher Charles Bukowski, known primarily as an American writer and drunkard. Atticus was faintly familiar that Bukowski was some sort of revered poet, but he knew nothing of the man, nothing of his work. Today, on this particular Friday, if Atticus were to sit down and read Mr. Charles Bukowski full stride, he'd find a one-ship with little that Mr. Bukowski actually wrote. That is, besides this. Bukowski's insistence that human depravity is unmatched in all the universe, that we, as a species, are impure. And, as damning contrast, animals are pure things, undefiled by sin, unbroken by guilt, shame, dereliction of duty. The line in the song was simple and so on point with what the day's events were about to bring. The most punishing lines came during the first bridge. I quote, "Well, take what you want from me. You deserve it all. 9 times out of 10, our hearts just get dissolved. Well, I want a better place, or just a better way to fall. But 1 time out of 10, everything is perfect for us all. Well, I want a better place, or just a better way to fall. Here we go." One out of 10. Decimation. It was coming. Like a darkness that no light can pierce. A cancer unstoppable. Atticus had found himself here, on foreign soil, searching for a way out. Yesterday evening, the mailman came. Most things about life in Christchurch, New Zealand were similar, if not exactly the same, as life in any major Western city before the apocalypse started. But mail was not among them. Mail came sporadically, and whenever. Members of Smugly's church tended not to work 9-to-5 jobs. This was intentional by the elders, by the way. And so the mail would come just at any time of the day or night. Atticus's came at 9 in the evening. A man roughly his own age handed him what looked and felt like a telegram. Mailmen at Free Church always handed you the mail. There were no mailboxes in use. Mail was, as a rule, delivered to you personally. Smugly had on file, of course, a person's work schedule. So if you had mail on a day you were at work, the mailman would find you there. This piece of mail, this telegram, or whatever it is, was different. In bold, dimpled print at the top of the extra-thick paper, it read, "From the desk of the elders," then below. Atticus, further, if you are breathing after the glass house, report immediately to the Elder's Council. You will be escorted off the island temporarily. You have been reassigned. Atticus was a smart enough lad to see what was going on here. Jen had made some sort of bargain with the Elders. She won him in some flavor of compromise politics. The good news, Atticus thought as he reread the brief letter, was the word temporarily. He was only to be off the island temporarily. Jen would use him, try to convince him to do her bidding, and then, assumably, after some shameful, guilt-ridden time period, he could return to be a member of Smugly's Church once more. Right now, he was being forced to remember the past, but only for a little while. Soon, he'd be able to breathe again in the memoryless air of New Zealand. That was how Atticus dealt with the letter. That is, until the rumor mill started squawking. On the evening before the glass house, Atticus was working a short shift at the psych ward. This, of course, is where his mail was delivered. But nearly an hour later, the hospital was abuzz. Jennifer Dash was here. Even after hitting the airwaves just a couple days ago in a hurrah for SETI's stupid aliens will time travel and save us propaganda, Smugly had seduced her. Had seduced Jennifer Dash. And more than that, she would visit the glass house. 6 a.m. tomorrow. Same exact time as Atticus. Jen was glass housing. Jen was glass housing. Oh God in heaven, Jennifer Dash was facing decimation. Keeping cool was foremost in Atticus's mind, at least until his shift was over. He had to, for the billionth time, talk down Sid Kalfas and generously stick him with liquid sleep agents. And then, just shy of midnight, he got to go home, catch a few Z's before the moment of standing toe-to-toe with death. It should be noted here that Smugly held no prejudice. Even the crazies of Rose Hospital Christchurch had reservations for the glass house. Sid Kalfas would take his transparent elevator up on Sunday. No one was granted a get-out-of-jail-free card. Supposedly, even the elders were walking the plank in the coming days. And now? Now Jennifer. 9 times out of 10, our hearts just get dissolved. This song stumbling into Atticus's ears at this ungodly hour brought reality to the fore. If it wasn't for him, Jen wouldn't be here. If it wasn't for Atticus's need to get out of Lake Charles come hell or high water, Jen wouldn't have to put her life at risk. Well, I want a better place, or just a better way to fall. Atticus cried. As he bellowed under the pre-dawn bleak sky way down under, the voice of his father came to him. Hey, buck up. Huh? Atticus replied to his imagination's self-flagellation. Buck up, boy. I didn't raise you to be a crybaby. I'm sorry. Sure you are, but there's no crying in baseball. Get up. I can't. What do you mean you can't? Every time I do anything, I hurt people. What does that have to do with getting up? I don't want to hurt anybody.
Get up, Atticus!
Why?
You've got a date in the glass house.
I can't do it.
You can. You will.
I can't.
Hey, you know who you are?
What?
A miserable son. An abominable brother. A betraying friend. A forgetful boyfriend.
I know. That's not true. That's not all true.
Oh, but it is. I'm ashamed of you. Ashamed to call you my son.
Don't say that.
Your blood boiling yet? Let it. When we fall down, when we're hurt, that's the only tool we have left in our back pocket.
Huh? What?
Hate. My son. Self-hate's usually the best place to start.
That goes against everything you've ever taught me. That goes against Jesus, against the Bible. Love your neighbor. Love God.
And what good have those philosophies done for you?
Done for me.
I say, they made you impotent in the face of real danger, real decisions. I needed you to end my life on my terms. I wanted you to do it.
I wanted my son to end me nobly. You remember the story of Saul, don't you, boy? How he died? The Bible says when he was king of Israel, and his army was defeated on the battlefield, he asked his soldiers to finish him off, to drive a sword through his chest. That was the honorable way for a king to die, not at the hand of some 1950s-style girlfriend, some Betty Boop. But Saul was a bad king. Maybe so. But he's quite a lot like you. The chosen one. The perfect son. Given prominence by birth. Firstborn inheritor of the throne. And, ultimately, when the story's told, a regret. A smudge. A smear. A shame on his father's house. You, son, have become Saul. Atticus pulled himself up, his conversation in his head carrying him through to the appointed time. His alarm clock bleated. It was time now. My God, it was time to face decimation.
We'll take what you want from me. You deserve it all.
Nine times out of ten, our hearts just get dissolved. But one time out of ten, everything is perfect for us all. Well, I want a better place. Or just a better way to fall. Here we go! Atticus dressed himself, wiped away his tears, and began to walk the 30 blocks to the glass house. As he marched his personal green mile, he pumped Bukowski into his mind over and over, trying desperately to outplay the broken record accusation. A dead father's finger pointing at his acutely guilty son. The words on his lips, venom-laden. Saul. My son is Saul. He deserves what's coming. He deserves decimation. He deserves death. Saul should not live. May the glass house do the Lord's bidding. The streets of Christchurch, home of Smugly, one and all, was already buzzing with lights and activity at 15 past 5 in the morning. Streaming lights bulletined the hot wire news. Gen Dash here. JD to Glass House. 6 a.m. Full participation. Full participation. Full participation. Atticus logically supposed, over the doldrums of his pseudo-father's curses, his chances of survival this morning were 90%. Most likely, he'd step out of the skyscraper none the worse for wear. Jennifer, however, was playing a whole different game. It didn't seem likely that she was walking into a fair contest. Smugly would want to use her up, one way or the other. There was probably a board somewhere, a pros and cons list scribbled on some blackboard. Is it better for Free Church to show that Jennifer Dash emerges from the glass house unscathed? The signpost at the beginning of the weekend purge that most citizens will evade defeat in the glass house? Or is it better to have her slain, a martyr for the cause? If you did that, you could venerate her. Jennifer Dash, the patron saint of decimation. Jennifer Dash, the girl who died for you. Jennifer Dash, she died so that your child didn't. Jennifer Dash, she took your place in the glass tomb. Nearing the glass house, as of yet still two blocks away, Atticus had to shimmy through a cloud of onlookers. There likely would have been a mass of people anyway, loved ones wishing and praying their family goodbye, perhaps for the final time. But the presence of the post-apocalyptic sensation Jen Dash, the closest living connection to the ascended Lilith Babbitt, caused a riot of wide-eyed celebrity hope-seekers. Atticus pushed his way through. Time was ticking. He managed to more or less bully his way to the front of the crowd. A handful of smugly-faced security officers escorted him to the identity checker. A quick profile, snapshot of his iris, and he was good to go. The eye machine spat out at him a little ticket. He waved the ticket at the guard securing the walkway to the big front glass door. Light was beginning to shine through past the horizon, finally causing the epic building to stand in deep contrast to the sky. The path to the front door was red velvet lined. Free Church wanted you to feel important, feel like luxury as you willingly march to your own demise. Walking with bated breath, Atticus mined the crowd in the building in front of him for some sign of her. Just 2 days ago, she was alone, with him. Once upon a time, she sat on his couch. He tended to her wounds, Once upon a time, they both were so innocent. Atticus couldn't help but rue a slight smirk. Even then, even at that first encounter, Jen was running from the world, trying to escape the wicked witch of the Midwest, Doll Burden. Into the house. It was just as it had been described to him. Pristine. Spotless. Shimmering. Translucent. Transparent. A mirage. The walkway was pretty skinny, actually. Right away, as soon as you entered, there were rooms on either side. Atticus looked up. Vertigo. He wasn't early at this point. There were hundreds already set up, standing in their little private purgatories. Looking up, Atticus saw the sky above, and column after column of tennis shoe bottoms. Towards the middle of the building, elevators. Atticus stepped in one towards his left. There was no elevator man, no one to assist him upwards. Rather, he slipped his ticket into a glass box, which responded by shooting his elevator swiftly up 36 floors. Seeing everything, quite literally everything, around you made the elevator hustle feel like the traumatic ascent of a terrifying roller coaster. Instinctually, Atticus's stomach flexed, awaiting the inevitable freefall. It was also a surreal, mystical experience. To shoot up into orbit with all these strangers just standing in seeming midair all around you. Then, the elevator stopped, its glass doors revealing a hallway among the clouds. Atticus took every step precariously. It really felt like you were tiptoeing across thin air. Meter your breath, Atticus. Don't lose yourself now. Halfway down the hallway, his room, his box, his destiny. Atticus took one sidestep into the rectangular room. Immediately inside, the sliding glass door sealed him within. A perfectly rectangular coffin. The rooms to either side of him were already stationed with awaiting souls. He made eye contact with both. An Asian woman, probably in her 50s, her mascara sprinting down her cheeks, making her look more like a member of KISS than a dutiful citizen of a totalitarian regime. And a willowy redhead, maybe 12 years old. Oh god, not him, Atticus thought. Too young. Too young. Adding up the numbers in his head, Atticus assumed it was still probably 20 minutes to the top of the hour. 20 minutes to live. Maybe something will happen. Maybe the elders will call it off. Maybe this was all a trick. Maybe all the elders wanted was to put the fear of God into every smuggly of Free Church. If that was the aim, then by golly, mission accomplished, boys. You can open the doors now. Atticus's heart was throbbing in its place, beating furiously against the dying of the light. He couldn't help it. Atticus glared up at the little circular pipe at the upper right corner of his little abode. That's where the poison would come out. What if he had to go to the bathroom? Would they open the doors for him? Let him pee in peace somewhere? He'd come back. Just had to pee. Gotta go. Go somewhere else now. Come on now, guys. Just let me urinate. Open the doors. Atticus touched the seams of the sliding glass door. It wasn't about to budge. Whoever built this contraption built it good, built it strong, and the whole thing now was automated. There was no one to hear him cry, to listen to his pleas. Wait, this is a mistake. It's all wrong. I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to taste death. I'm not ready to die. I don't wanna. God, I don't wanna die. I don't wanna. Don't let me die here. Oh God, did you ever love me? Oh God. Oh God, did you ever love me? Did you ever care for this orphan boy from Louisiana? Who are you anyway? Just a puppet master? Huh? You give and you take away? Huh? Who are you? Who are you to take away? Atticus shouted in his heart to the god he doubted. You sick boy. Atticus's imitation, Joseph, further lashed out. You deserve this. No one deserves this. Everyone deserves this. Everyone. You most of all. except Betty, except Scout. But they've received fates far worse than this, haven't they?
You don't know that,
Atticus rebutted. Scout's at Onmo, probably the safest place in the world.
Yeah.
You really believe that? Do you, King Saul? You believe your orphan sister is safe in an unknown location? Surrounded by war-torn strangers? Strangers without candy? Strangers who have blackness in their hearts? Strangers who want the world to feel their pain? Strangers in a strange land where there's no checks and balances? What did I always teach you? You remember, don't you?
Transparency is the only shield against corruption.
Yeah. Yes, here you are. In your transparent kingdom, acting like it's hell, while your baby sister rots in a land where no one is there to keep evil in line. Where are the whistleblowers in Onmo? Where are the sacred watchdogs? Nowhere. You've left your sis to die amongst a sea of vultures. You've left her to the wild west of orphanhood.
Stop it, Atticus pleaded.
And Betty! Betty! Oh, Betty Boop! You made her feel so guilty. Guilty for doing the very things you should have done. Guilty for doing the things you would have done, were you not such a coward.
Atticus, trying to avoid the voice in his head, looked up. Just one floor up. And one row over, Jennifer Dash. She stood. She was wearing those silly knee-high striped baseball socks this morning, just as she did when they first met. Her hair was long. Was it a wig? Atticus hadn't noticed before. Wasn't it supposed to be short? She looked just the same, just as beautiful, just as innocent right now, standing in her little glass booth as she did on his couch. In the convenience store. Atticus tapped on the glass above his head. The dude right above him looked down. Atticus swept him away with his hands.
Jen, look at me. This last moment. Jen, we don't have much time. Look at me.
She did. All the pain, the guilt, the stupid perversion of his father floated away with this perfect Jen Dash smile.
Jennifer Dash, master of the universe. She was a goddess here.
Atticus couldn't see any lines of disturbance on her brow, no worry in her eyes. She was at peace.
Peace? How? How could she be at peace in this place?
He smiled back at her, and dumbly, not knowing what to do, waved, shyly. She waved back. Any moment now. The sun was fully crested just above the horizon. Ready to go. Ready for a new day. Well, take what you want from me. You deserve it all. 9 times out of 10, our hearts just get dissolved. But 1 time out of 10, everything is perfect. He was going. Atticus knew it. It wasn't like his mind was saying. It wasn't that he was some great betrayer. Atticus was no Saul. He was just Atticus. And all this guilt? It was his conscience, maybe his soul, maybe even God, telling him his time was coming to a close. Everyone rages against the dying of the light, right? His self-torture was just this. Atticus had always wanted answers, always wanted to understand the world around. He always wanted everything to make sense, even if it was evil. Atticus wanted to know the motivations for the serial killer, wanted there to always be order, even in chaos. Now, his soul was trying to understand the ununderstandable. He was trying to grapple with, reason out, the randomness of his own death. Atticus stood staring at the circular vent. Any second now, would he see it, smell it, or would it just happen without a second's notice? Who lives, who dies, there's no reason here. If he was to die for a reason, that'd be okay. That's why the masochism of his phantom father. If Atticus was evil, this moment would make sense. It would be just. After all, that's what Atticus wanted most of all. Justice. He wanted to live, he wanted to die, in a just
world. Cruel fate. There is no justice here. Only randomness. Atticus couldn't breathe. This was it. The dying of the light. Time out. Time over. Time gone. No. Not choking. Hyperventilating. You can breathe. You can breathe. Calm down. You can breathe. Atticus hung his head, lightheaded, giddy for just this moment. It hadn't happened yet. There's air in my lungs. Still good air. Sweet air. Glance over at the Kiss Lady. She's still standing, still crying, still dripping black tar down her face. Red-headed stepchild. Thank God, still standing. Anyone fallen? Anyone fallen? Anyone gone yet? Yes. A squint down, and Atticus could make out some slumped over bodies. What? It's real. It's all real. There's no going back now. It's happening. Look up! Jen! 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 Jen. She's not smiling now. She's... Her eyes. Her eyes are flitting. Her knees. They're buckling. No! Jennifer Dash. Jen. Jen. She's losing consciousness. Jennifer Dash collapses in her cell. They killed her, didn't they? Smugly killed her! Smugly killed her! Joseph further flamed back to life inside of Atticus's head.
You did this! You killed her! This is your real punishment! You brought her here! You made her a martyr!
One time out of 10, everything is perfect for us all.
Well, I want a better place. Or just a better way to fall.
Send me your questions now! Hi guys, this is Dante Stack. I hope you enjoyed this episode. All the music and sound effects used in this episode are appropriately attributed at DanteStack.com. Be sure to check out Modest Mouse and their song Bukowski, which I didn't use because I didn't ask for the rights to the song, but you can find them pretty much everywhere. They're a popular band. Go ahead, listen to the song. And please, please, please send me your questions. If you're listening to this episode the week that it comes out, good job. You have probably until Sunday, June 5th, to get me your questions to get on next week's Solving the World special question and answer podcast. I need more questions, guys, so I'm relying on you to make this episode worth your while. All right, take care. See you next time.